little intimidating being here. I'm used to talking to beekeeper groups, and so I'm used to seeing a lot of familiar faces, and there are a few out there. So thanks for being here. I want to emphasize that this talk here is, you know, when CCD started, we really did try to pull a large team together. And you can see some of the institutions that were initially involved. And in a lot of ways, what I'm going to be talking about in the next little while is talking about how we collected samples, some of our results, and then these samples were widely distributed among these partners. And so I'll be doing that. But before I do that, I think it's important to put in context colony losses. And if we look in Pennsylvania specifically in 1980, we had nearly 80,000 colonies. However, when we had the introduction of these foreign mites, honeybee trachoma mites, followed by varroa mites, we saw large declines in bee populations. And consistently, to this day, most of the colonies that are being lost are probably being lost by these mites. And we don't have a handle on controlling mites. This has implications in two ways. First, we know that beekeepers have become very good at replacing dead out colonies, because in order to survive, they have to replace those dead out colonies. So those beekeepers that are surviving have to be innovative and on top of these mites in order to survive, and still they continue to lose mites or bees. It also means that from a regulatory point of view or from a scientific point of view, I think we've been easy to dismiss a lot of losses due to mites, because, you know, and indeed, when I first heard about this problem, I thought, oh, it's mites. And so while we say that we saw the first cases last year, it is very likely, in hindsight, to think that it perhaps started earlier. We just weren't on top of it. But the story of CCD in the last year really started with Dave Hackenberg, who's a beekeeper in Pennsylvania. He's the poster child of CCD. To do it over again, maybe we should have called it Hackenberditis. But his story is this, that he had hives in Pennsylvania that he described as boiling over with bees. And he moved those hives to Florida, as he does every year, and went back a month later and found that 2,000 of his 3,000 colonies were completely abandoned. And he was rather confident that it wasn't mites. And so he brought those colonies back, a couple of those colonies that were reduced size, and Diana took some samples, and we got some samples, and we looked at it, and we started hearing reports from around the country of a very similar condition, a similar complaint. And in fact, when we did a survey through the Apiary Inspectors of America, we found that there were a lot of losses. Now, there's a couple of very interesting things in this slide. The first thing you'll know is that if you look at the bottom there, over the people who managed over 500 colonies, that a beekeeper considered his losses normal if he lost 17% of his colonies. Now that's astonishing at some level. Can you imagine any other agricultural production system that accepted a regular 17% loss and considered that normal? So that's an astonishing number in itself. However, last winter, 51% of the respondents described an abnormal loss, so losses that were above normal. And in that commercial beekeeper group, they lost about 55% of their colonies, some as many as 70 or 80% of their colonies. Not all of those losses were CCD. In fact, we estimate only 25% of those abnormal losses were CCD. So by far and away, most colonies died from starvation and from varroa or other things that the beekeeper suggested what that cause of death was. But it's that other element, that other group of beekeepers, those migratory beekeepers who have experienced high losses, that are of concern, because they can lose that number of colonies 1 year in a row, but they can't lose that number of colonies 2 years in a row and stay in business. And this is the segment of the industry that move their colonies up and down the coasts to meet the pollination demand. So I think they're a very important group. So what is CCD? How do we measure or figure out what CCD is? And it is a symptom-based diagnosis. And it's described as being the rapid loss of adult bees from these colonies. And we know it was a rapid loss because in many cases, we see very large populations of brood and not enough bees to cover it. And so If the queen is, if the colony is not completely abandoned, we don't find dead bees in the colony, we don't find them in the apiary. If there are bees left, they tend to be very young bees, and the queen. Now, we've been monitoring colonies, and I'll just briefly touch on this later on in the talk, but we've been monitoring colonies all year, trying to look for CCDN. And all year, you know, we saw colonies that weren't growing properly, but we never saw this classic symptom until 2 weeks ago in Florida. And so it seems to have some seasonality, this classic sign of symptom, or this classic loss. So when this came up, you know, there were a lot of theories proposed. Some of these theories have been dismissed. Cell phones, we do not think, is the cause of CCD. However, beekeepers are not advised to give their bees cell phone because they'll only pollinate blackberries. We do not believe that the bees were raptured or aliens abducted them, or that it is a terrorist threat. However, maybe one of you want to prove that. So what we do think is we sort of have three principal lines of investigation. The idea of a pathogen, either newly evolved or newly introduced. The idea of a pesticide, either a beekeeper applied, because beekeepers have to apply these miticides to control varroa mite and these other mites, or farmer applied, that the bees are bringing back, or an environmental stress, and I use that term loosely to talk about nutrition and genetics. And so these are the principal hypothesis. Now, it could very well be, and I'll make this argument at the end of the talk, that it's a combination of these things, so a multifactorial thing, the perfect storm, if you like. So, of course, it's hard to sample bees if the symptom is there are no dead bees in the colony. So what we did was we with the USDA, went to Florida and California and sampled colonies that had come from 11 different states. You can see the picture on the top is from Florida, and the picture on the bottom is California. And I think that's a really enlightening picture, because when I first saw this in the valley, I thought it was snow on the bottom of the valley. And in fact, in that one valley, in your eyesight, you could see more colonies in California in January than there are in the state of Pennsylvania in the middle of the summer. So you can see there's this huge congregation of colonies. So if there is a contagious condition, you can imagine that could be spread rather quickly. You can imagine, too, that you have to be very aggressive about providing food for these colonies, because that's an issue. So we found colony or apiaries that there was active collapse in. So we saw dead colonies, we saw strong colonies, and we saw these weak colonies. And so I'll be talking about those principally in the next couple of slides. We also found a couple of colonies where the colonies had been declining and then seemed to be rebounding or recovering. So that was a group. Some beekeepers had added packages to their colonies to increase the size, and some had been established as packages. Of course, we also had some control apiaries where we had strong and sometimes weak colonies in that control apiary, but the weak colonies did not demonstrate that symptom of CCD. We collected bees on alcohol, we collected them on dry ice, and we took a section of comb. And I want to just talk a little bit about what we did with these samples. The first thing we did was we measured the colonies when we were there. And I bring up this slide to say that one of the things, the symptom-based analysis, we're trying to work towards having something to a quantifiable measure. And that measure is perhaps going to be related to the ratio of bees to brood. Of course, you want a good coverage of bees on brood to keep that brood warm and well-fed. And certainly, if we look at the colonies that were in the CCD apiaries, they had a reduced bees-to-brood ratio. So it wasn't that good, strong coverage. And so we're looking at that as perhaps a measure that we can use. Now, there is a weakness in that measure, because if you're a beekeeper, you know that colonies experience spring dwindle. So in the spring, you can see this reduced adult population with too much brood. And so it's not a perfect one, but I think this clearly demonstrates that there is something different in that population ratio. So we sent different samples out. So we looked at alcohol samples for honeybee tracheomite, varroa, and nosema. The picture on the top is not honeybee tracheomite, but Jeff Pettis, and I put that there because I want to emphasize that his lab did this analysis. And when we looked at that analysis, the first thing that became, this was startling, we see, if you look at this, it looks like, if we're looking at varroa mites, or the number of mites per 100 bees, This suggests that, well, Varroa explains this. In fact, if you look at the median, though, so the number, the average, or the halfway mark in Varroa mite population, we see that in the strong colonies and the weak colonies in the CCD operations, those are well below threshold. There were a couple of colonies that had extremely high Varroa mites, and that's bumped up the median. But as a median, there were lots of colonies in these CCD groups that had no mites at all, or no detectable mites at all. So we can't claim that it's Varroa mite, I think. The same is true for Nosema. If you look at the average mean levels, it looks like Nosema is a very large player. However, in many cases, if we look at the median Nosema levels, it's zero for both strong and weak colonies in the CCD yards. That means that at least half the colonies had no detectable level of Nosema. And so we had a couple of colonies that had very high levels of Nosema, and certainly that is a concern, and that is probably a very likely contributor to it, but by and large, it couldn't explain all the cases of collapse. I think it's also important to realize that the colonies that had packages added or were established from Australia bees had very high levels of Nosema. And it is illegal in Australia to treat for Nosema, and so that's something that beekeepers need to consider. The alcohol samples, we at my lab at PDA, we did some autopsies. We were looking for a way of seeing if there was a non-molecular diagnostic technique, and we found a couple of interesting things I'll highlight here. We found, in fact, that these nodules, which I thought couldn't be very good for bees, but in fact that in the recovering bees, 83% of the bees taken out of recovering colonies had these nodules. And so one of the lines of investigation in the future is trying to figure out what these white nodules are. We also looked at a lot of different parts of the digestive system. Something that did spring out was melanization on the sting gland. So this is the sting gland here, and then of course the venom sac at the bottom. And we saw an awful lot of, 42% of bees from the CCD apiaries had this melanization versus 22% in the non-CCD apiaries. And we have to figure out what that is. Another thing are the malpighial tubules, or the kidneys of the bees, and we found a lot of this pebbling. One of my technicians called it a sparkling effect. We found this sort of granular tissue in a lot of the CCD bees, and 17% of them versus 2% in the non-CCD bees. So there are some anatomical differences that we're hoping to try to figure out in the next couple of years. We also took a lot of frozen bees, and you can see these bees up here, and those frozen bees got spread out to a lot of different labs. So Jay Evans got some, and we're going to hear some of the results from that work. Diana Cox Foster got some, and passed those on to some of her colleagues as well. Dave Tarpey did some to do genetic and protein profiling, or protein content. The Illinois group got some, and we'll be hearing the results from that to do some of their work. And so we spread these same samples out to these groups, or a subset of these samples. We also collected pollen, or bee bread, which is the protein, of course, that the bees bring back. And we gave this to Marianne Fraser, Jim Fraser, and Chris Mullen to do pesticide analysis. And we also did the wax analysis for miticides. And I'll let them speak to it. I think, though, that it, just like with the Varroa mite and Nosema, nothing has come out as the clear smoking gun, that there's not a monofactorial thing here. So we need to now get all that data together and sort of do a multifactorial analysis. I'm just going to present with the protein data. Dave Tarpey was looking for the protein content in the bees as a surrogate for nutrition suppression, or lack of good nutrition. There was no effect for that, but one interesting thing that did result from that was that when we weighed or took the mass of the bees' heads and the thoraxes, it turned out that that recovering group of bees also tended to have bigger heads than the other bees in our study. So there's something interesting going on in that recovering group. I don't think that any discussion of CCD is complete without at least some discussion of the press. The press has been is a monster, and it needs to be fed, you know, and it's been overwhelming, and it's been a very big learning curve, but I also think that in it there's also some hope, because there's been this huge interest, I think, from the general public about bees, and we've been trying to figure that out, And I think it's, you know, in a world full of global warming and war and all these other things, we can't really comprehend that. But I think at a very innate level, the general public realizes that bees are good, and a world without bees isn't the same. And so I think that when that barrage is coming, it's good to remind ourselves that it's an indication of general interest, and that has to be a good thing. And the message is not that CCD is here and there's, you know, it's going to be terrible, but, you know, pollinators are important and we need to be protecting them. And I think that's, that message has been getting out, and I think that's something that the whole, like a lot of you in this room and a lot of people on that team have been helping spread. I do want to talk briefly about one of the studies that has been ongoing with the USDA and North Carolina State. We've been monitoring colonies in three migratory operations as they move up and down the coast and sampling every month. One of the problems with our CCD sampling, of course, is that you know, it was just one picture at one point in time. And so hopefully this then was a longitudinal study so we can look over time at what happens. And then we can go back to those colonies that have collapsed and look back in time at the samples we've collected. We've also initiated a study where we irradiated dead out equipment and treated it with different things to see if that can help with the bees. And certainly those studies are ongoing, and we'll be presenting some of that hopefully at the big bee meetings in Sacramento in January. So if I were to summarize the future directions, one of the things that we really do realize we need is a quantitative in-field measure. So we have something that, you know, is sort of a, you know, you have CCD when. Hopefully we can develop that and test that. We have to do the multifactorial analysis, and certainly we're still getting some of the data in, and then hopefully we'll run that. And of course these longitudinal studies where we're looking over time at samples to see if we can predict colony loss or not. Of course there's the obligatory funding thing, and I think this is important to note that most of this was done on a shoestring budget and emergency funding here and there, and I think there's been a lot of creativity here in finding funding. The National Honey Board has certainly taken a very prominent leadership role in funding some of these projects and some of these analyses, which are not cheap. I mean, to do the wax and pollen analysis in a colony is over $300 a sample, and we have 100 samples to do, so you can do the math. You know, the Foundation for the Preservation of Honeybees has given us some money. The Eastern Apicultural Society, a lot of beekeeping organizations have given some money. Different state and governments have given money. Penn State has given some of its internal resources. One of the things that I individual beekeepers have been very good. I mean, there's a guy in Florida who sent all our frozen samples to all the universities that needed them for free. He covered the cost, and that's quite substantial. You know, that's nearly $1,000 of FedEx he's done for us. And also there's this wonderful story of the lady in Brooklyn, 16-year-old lady who's raised over $10,000 and given it to CCD research at Penn State. So that's been a silver lining and a real, you know, that's a nice thing about this whole year, I suppose. So that's my talk, and thank you for being here.
I think we have time for one question, if anyone has a question for Dennis.
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. The question is this only affecting large commercial beekeepers? The answer is no. It's affecting the whole sort of gamut of beekeepers. So we're seeing it in smaller operations, but it's the large ones that are of most concern because they're the critical ones, and if they go out of business, they're not easy to replace.